Welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I do want to remind you, we have a cool sponsor, Audible, so we'll talk more about that a little bit later. And as usual, I am joined by the most unusual and curiously strong Jason McCullen.
Really? You think I'm unusual?
You are a bit unusual.
Well,
but that's a compliment from me.
I do agree with you, and yes, I take it as a compliment. So thank you, my friend.
Yeah, if you were usual, I would think you were really lame.
Yeah, usual is lame.
Yeah, so you're unusual, which is just a gigantic compliment, one of the biggest compliments I could give.
You're such a swell guy.
And I feel, you know, our loving listening audience is very unusual as well. We met quite a few of them at the Congress. We always meet them at these UFO conferences, and they were quite unusual.
Yes, it was great to see so many of them there. So for all of you who came up and said hello, thank you for doing that. It's always great to meet you guys.
Yeah, and but I only gave a couple hugs. I mean, we were promoting free hugs if they came to the conference, and I figured, you know, a lot of people would be wanting some free hugs for Maureen, but only a couple hugs, huh?
You know, I don't think I was asked for a single hug, even though you told people that I was giving free hugs, so.
Yeah, weird.
That's all right. That's
yeah.
All right.
What the heck, we still had fun.
Yeah.
All right, so again, yes, thank you all. We have been away for a couple weeks because we've been putting on the UFO Congress, the largest UFO conference in the world. I used to hesitate to say that, but, you know, over the years, been looking into it, and we're the largest annual conference on this topic in the entire world. So we've got this planet covered. Open Minds. UFO Congress. And that's going to be the topic of our show. We're actually going to bring on our good friend Lee Spiegel from the Huffington Post, who covers weird stuff. And as I said, you know, you guys are weird. We're pretty weird too. So that's a perfect combination. And our conference is kind of weird, but fun. So we'll bring Leon, who was there the whole time and was covering the conference. And we're all going to talk about what was so cool about the conference, maybe what was creepy, what was scary, what made us cry, what made us laugh. And yes, we do experience a roller coaster of emotions during this busy and crazy week of the UFO Congress. So that's what we'll be talking about in just a little bit here. I did want to remind people of the Audible free trial. You can go to audibletrial.com/UFO radio, and you'll get a free month of audio books, which is really cool because there's a lot of UFO books, including Leslie Kane's, and I know Jason, you use Audible, and you've listened to some of the UFO books.
I haven't listened to any of the UFO books.
Oh, okay.
I haven't done that yet. No, my Audible listening has been solely sci-fi.
Oh, cool. Have you had a favorite so far?
Well, like I mentioned before, I've listened to a few of the Robert Heinlein vintage sci-fi books, and those are fun to listen to as audiobooks because the people or the person doing the reading will actually voice different characters, and there's some music added to it. So it's kind of like a radio play. So
Oh, cool.
It's a really, really fun way to listen to it.
Oh, that is fun. And those Heinlein books get pretty weird. They're very creative. I used to read those as a kid because one of the cool things, I had my stepdad's book collection, you know, in my closet down in the basement where I had my home. And so I would read all of his old sci-fi stuff, and they're so interesting and kind of strange and creative. They're a lot of fun.
I love great sci-fi authors like that who can just pull from their minds and create an entirely different reality create different rules for universes and different characters, different worlds. It's pretty exciting stuff. So listening to it in an audiobook format adds a little more to it than just reading it. When you read it, you imagine things yourself and the way people talk, but then when you hear somebody else do it, that makes it a little easier on your brain. Sometimes I prefer actually reading, but this is a fun way to do it when I'm feeling lazy or my eyes are tired from staring at a computer all day.
Yep. So audibletrial.com/UFO radio, and that is us. We are the UFO radio sponsored by Audible. audibletrial.com/UFO radio. The thing is that you have to mention it 3 times to help people remember, so that's why I do that. So people know why I do that. I'm not just trying to be annoying. That's
You're
why
so nice. You're yeah. so nice.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. So let's get into UFO news of the week, because we also, of course, cover our favorite news stories of the week. Now, we did write some stories that resulted from the conference that have gotten a lot of hits. So we'll actually talk about that later on when we bring on Lee. But other than conference stuff, what was your favorite UFO story of the last week, Big J?
Well, Alejandro, it's been such a busy and crazy time, with during the conference and then getting back and trying to catch up on a week's worth of stuff that we missed while at the conference. But something I think I want to talk about this briefly. It's not a UFO story, but more exciting space stuff. And we keep talking about this and the developments happening at a rapid pace in space exploration and searching for alien worlds. There is a university professor who is really excited about the prospect of detecting alien civilizations with a new tool that's going to be launched. Now, this is the ESA, the European Space Agency. They've got a new telescope in the works. It's called the PLATO. That stands for Planetary Transit and Oscillations of Stars Space Telescope. And this thing's scheduled to launch in 2024, so 10 years from now, right around the corner. And this thing is going to have a field of view 20 times greater than Kepler. Now, we all know, many of us know about Kepler, NASA's Kepler Space Telescope, and anyone who's listened to this show knows that you and I are big fans of Kepler, but poor Kepler is no longer functioning the way it was designed. It's being used for other purposes because it malfunctions and can no longer be used for detecting these potentially habitable worlds. So now we've got PLATO that's going to go out and has this enormous field of view with actually has 34 telescopes on a single satellite. It's not just one telescope, it's 34, and they can be used in a variety of configurations. So it's going to be out there not only looking for these potentially habitable worlds falling within the habitable zone of their parent stars, but this thing, in conjunction with tools on the ground too, is going to be able to look into the atmospheres of planets. And that's a big, big key now in looking at these alien worlds, not just imaging them and seeing, yes, there's a planet there, but then going deeper and seeing what the atmospheres on these planets are like. And that will help in the search for life as we know it. And there's a professor at the University of Warwick who believes that in the next 15 years, we're going to be able to detect an alien civilization based on this looking at into atmospheres, because he thinks that we'll be able to see pollution, and pollution in the atmosphere will be a sign of an intelligent alien civilization. So we have so many scientists weighing in and offering their opinions, and that's all they are at this point, but educated guesses as to when intelligent extraterrestrials are going to be found. And, we're hearing numbers within the next, 10 to 20 years. And as I have gone on record before, Alejandro, I agree with that completely.
I think it is so – I love this story. I think it's so cool, that you have 34 telescopes on this one satellite. The picture that they have of it is so cool, where you have these 34 things on the surface of the satellite. It's extremely exciting. The only bummer is we have to wait 10 years for this thing to be launched, which is such a bummer because I'm getting old. Big J, I'm getting old, man.
Well, I think that 10 years is going to go by fast, but there's so many other things that are being realized as well around that time. You know, if Mars One happens, the colony on Mars is going to happen around that time. SpaceX is going to be doing some things on Mars around that time. Many other countries have Mars missions lined up around that time. So a lot is going to be happening in the 20s. And I think that's just going to blow things wide open. The discovery is going to come flooding in. And with the technology, man, as we've mentioned so many times, I mean, we're living in the future. The future is now. That the sci-fi world is sci-fi reality. And it's so exciting seeing all of these things just kind of come together all at once. And the world is changing so much. So I think what we find out in space is going to be just gigantic in the next, even in the next 5 years. So
yeah, you got a good point. Yep. There's lots of big stuff, gigantic stuff in space.
Yep.
So all space news is pretty much usually gigantic news.
Well, anymore. I mean, every almost every day, but definitely every week, there are big news story. Big
well,
space
and what
stories.
I mean, like metaphorically and physically, you know, planets are like really big.
Some of them. There are dwarf planets, Alejandro.
Those are pretty big still, though.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, so I'm right. Trying
All
to
right.
be silly here.
I got it.
Yeah.
I totally sense your humor, your lack of humor.
But yeah, this is
I'm
really
kidding.
Exciting. And then the thoughts that, you know, the images that it creates in my mind, I mean, how exciting would it be? You know, it kind of reminds me of like a steampunk type of thing or something. I mean, if we spot a civilization from their pollution that is maybe not as evolved as we are, or maybe they're older but they haven't reached our level of technology, who knows. I get all of these Star Trek-ish sci-fi kind of ideas in my head, and how exciting, I mean, how exciting would it be if we did see the civilization that's like in our kind of Victorian era of technology that we can just kind of spy on with our satellites and stuff. That would be pretty cool. It's exciting.
Very voyeuristic, Alejandro.
Yeah, well, that'd be fun.
I think they're out there.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to cheat because it's my show.
You're allowed.
Because I wrote about, first I'll just mention that, you know, we did post these three UFO videos from Mexico, some more interesting than others, but at least, you know, one I think is really interesting. But you could go check that out. But what I want to talk about are two stories about Muslims, which because we posted two. And I'll talk more about one than the other. This one is, this is kind of interesting. The Islamic leaders have prohibited one-way trips to Mars. And you had just mentioned Mars One. And although these Islamic leaders don't mention Mars One, they are essentially referring to it, because what they've said, what they've done is issued a fatwa, and I'm probably not saying it right because I'm saying it like it's a French word, which it is not, but this fatwa is essentially an Islamic rule where a governing or scholars set up a rule that other Muslims have to follow or recommend they follow. They're enforced in various ways. But anyway, this is a general authority of Islamic affairs and endowment in the United Arab Emirates. And they essentially said that they prohibit one-way trips to Mars because they're too dangerous. They say they pose a real risk to life that can't be justified in Muslim and or in Islam, and they say that anybody who travels to Mars may not be able to remain alive there and is vulnerable to death. So they cannot allow this hazardous trip to happen, and that the people who go there and die are going to die for no righteous reason, and so that's why they've done it. I actually posted this. It'll hopefully be showing up. It's on our website. But I'm also put it on the Huffington Post blog too, so hopefully that'll show up soon because it's kind of a neat story. But Mars One did reply, actually, and they said, you know, this is an exciting exploration. Islam is full of exploration, so please rescind your fatwa, and because we'd love to have Muslims involved, and it's kind of neat. Outer places, some of our buddies, they had created an infographic on those people who have applied thus far. Over 200,000, like you've reported on this a lot, over 200,000 applied. They've cut that down now to just over 1,000 candidates, and they'll be cutting that down even further. But there have been many, many Muslims who have applied, so now they may need to reconsider. We'll see. But it's pretty interesting stuff. It's kind of a really interesting story. And although, you know, I am not a Muslim, I'm following this fatwa myself because I do agree that it is a bit of a foolhardy mission to send these people one way to Mars, because it is kind of a suicide mission. I mean, I just can't imagine, you know, being stuck in a little box for the rest of your life, even though it'll be extremely exciting to go there and to be there for a period of time. I think it's going to get really old really fast in this big barren, you know, red rock. Even if there is some life, you know, tiny bits of life, it's going to be pretty boring walking or living out there and stuck with these people that you really barely know, and who knows if you'll get along with them. So I don't like roommates at all.
Well,
so, I mean, I would have a hard time.
As far as Mars One goes, that's part of their astronaut selection program. I mean, they're going to make sure that people are compatible, and they certainly have to be, because part of their duties is to populate Mars.
But assuming you can do that, I mean, I don't really think there's any psychological testing. I mean, look at relationships or even family relationships. I don't think you can ever really be sure two people are going to get along. I don't think there's any testing you can do to confirm that. So
no, that's certainly right. You can't make sure that, and it's almost guaranteed that people aren't going to, especially a small group of people, are all going to like each other forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, might get along initially, but after time and I imagine the possibility or likelihood of kind of going crazy in that kind of environment is pretty high. So, you know, if they start out doing all right, then after, you know, a few months, a year, whatever, being in that confined area in this lonely planet, could go crazy.
Yeah, and you wrote a story about a documentary that was made called One Way Astronaut, I think it's called, that highlights some of these people. And some of these people are very credentialed, interesting people. That documentary is really cool, and I link to it on the bottom so people can check that out. So there are some people, you know, these aren't just suicidal maniacs. One of them is a very attractive comedian, but I think she's doing it for publicity. But regardless, there are some people who are very serious about it and so we'll see. I mean, and, you know, it's their right to do this, I suppose, should this actually happen. But it seems like it is a very credible project in that these guys are working with major defense and aerospace contractors to get this done. And they plan to be launching probes and things within the next 10 years.
Right. So that's one story. You said you were going to talk about two.
Oh, yeah, the other story having to do with Muslims, just really quickly. We've talked about this before, about Louis Farrakhan and his interest in UFOs and the wheel, this giant UFO. He says it's going to come and annihilate white America. And essentially he just did a speech recently where he asked President Obama to open up Area 51, and he's alluding to essentially saying to end UFO secrecy so people know about this wheel, and he says that essentially maybe if Obama does that, you know, that the wheel will take some, it won't be as destructive, or somehow, you know, that will help it from destroying all white people, maybe it'll decide, well, just a few or something. I'm not sure what his logic here is. But, yeah, he made an appeal to Obama to open Area 51 for this purpose. And in our story on that, we posted some of the details about this wheel, which he says has more wheels inside of it. And each of these wheels have three bombs that they carry because they're going to go bomb stuff. And very interesting. And this has made some news. But another weird story. UFO story.
Yeah, definitely a weird one. But yeah, I don't know what's prompting it now. Perhaps Obama's recent comments about Area 51 and the sort of declassification of Area 51. But
yeah. Yeah, that would be my guess. He's kind of capitalizing on all of that. And,
right.
I don't think that Obama is going to be very influenced by his comments, but certainly more interesting comments coming from Louis Farrakhan. And a couple years ago, actually, he had his conference at the same time as our UFO Congress, and some of our UFO Congress people went and flew over and spoke at his thing and then came to ours. So we did have some UFO researchers involved with his conference a couple years ago. So that was kind of interesting. But those are my news stories. Any final thoughts, Mr. McClellan?
No, I thought your stories were great. It's always fun to talk about this news with you, buddy, and I'm glad we're back to it. You know, the Congress is great and fun and exhausting, but it means that we have to miss out on our various shows, so it is good to be back.
Yeah, good to be back. And Jason's going to stay on the line. Right, Jason? You promised to stay. You're really going to, aren't you?
Wait a second. You didn't tell me that.
Uh-oh.
Yes, of course. I'm here.
So, but we're also going to bring on the formidable UFO hotshot. I always try to come up with creative titles. Lee Spiegel from the Huffington Post, and we're going to talk about our favorite moments and some of the cool stuff at the UFO Congress. Mr. Lee Spiegel, are you there?
Formidable hotshot?
Yeah. That's kind of cool, right? Formidable UFO hotshot.
I like that. I want to start off by saying that I also agree. I don't think you spent enough time talking about how curiously strong Jason is.
Yeah, it is amazing. You know, when we set up and take down, and I'm talking in not just physical but also mental powers.
Yes. Well, and Jason, I want to remind you, because you were complaining a little bit how you didn't get enough hugs at the UFO Congress. Don't you remember? I gave you several hugs there.
Aww.
I wasn't complaining. I was just pointing out that Alejandro made such a big deal about it on the show and told people, without clearing it with me first, but that's okay, that I was offering up free hugs, so come and hug me at the conference. And I didn't really get anybody from the radio show, Lee. That's specifically what I'm talking about. I don't throw you into the pot of UFO or radio listeners. You know, you and I are friends, so I expected the hug from you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I took
not that it wasn't appreciated any less, but
well, and I don't want people to think that, you know, every time I walked around the corner and saw you, I went running up to you to hug you. That didn't happen.
Right. Some of the times I was running away.
Yes, I totally get that. And that's because I'm so formidable.
Right.
Yes. And I was worried, Alejandro. I thought your introduction, you were going to say he was a UFO hottie.
Oh. Well, some may think so.
Well,
there were some young ladies this year at the conference who asked me about Lee Spiegel and referred to him as a UFO hottie.
No, I don't believe that.
Well, speaking of age, and I think even one of the stories, the Syracuse New Times noticed the mean age of our conference is pretty high, pretty up there, and I think it's above Lee's age. So I think a lot of those older women, baby boomers, but I think even the generation before attends our conference.
That's right.
Consider Lee a young whippersnapper, so I'm sure they are very impressed with and may consider him a hottie.
So are you saying that the only women that would actually consider me as a real hottie are older women?
Why? Sure. See, Lee's always got to look for, instead of the silver lining, what would it be? Like the crappy
silver
lining?
No, the silver-haired lining.
The silver-haired
lining. Silver-haired lining, right.
Well, so, I thought, you know, conferences, UFO conferences, historically, have always had the reputation of just, you know, loony people showing up at these things. But that's not the case anymore. At least it's not the case with the UFO Congress.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
I mean, we had one guy coming up. He was upset with what Don Schmidt had to say about Wright-Patterson because he worked at Wright-Patterson. You want to talk to him, but he's into this topic. But you do have other professionals and things like that coming. I mean, very interesting people. We even have some people I know who, and they're kind of private about it, who are very, very successful businessmen.
And women
that come to the conference. So we have a lot of really interesting people. And although it is true that, which is true of these conferences overall, that there are a lot of the people are older, we do have quite a big crowd of younger people. And they're often really interesting. I think a bigger crowd than most conferences of younger people, but who are really into this. And I thought it was interesting. There's this young woman who didn't look like she was in her 20s, but she was in her young 20s. I guess the older you get, the younger people look. But and she had a tattoo, big tattoo on her back of a UFO.
I know. I think I saw a picture of that where she was lifting up her shirt so you could actually see the UFO tattoo.
Yeah. So we do get younger people as well.
You know, I wanted to also say, you know, when you guys are talking about the whole Islamic attitude about people going to Mars, we shouldn't forget that when they say that people shouldn't go because there would be a constant danger there to them, well, you got to figure living in plenty of places here on Earth also poses a daily dose of danger to people.
That's true. That is very true.
You know, and all right, sure, the danger is more prevalent on Mars, but there are a lot of people who really want to be part of the team of colonists to the Red Planet. And I think it should be their decision to do it and not the decision of any religious doctrine that says they shouldn't go.
Yeah. No, I agree. They should go if they want to. I'm very scared for them, as
yeah.
I'm sure that this fatwa committee is as well. So it's kind of a scary prospect, and I'm certainly going to have my eyes glued to the reality TV show they were planning on doing if they do that. But as I'm sure many, many other people will be. But I wish them luck, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you. This whole Plato spacecraft project with all the different telescopes on it, I don't want to wait 10 years for this to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, we keep talking about how, okay, we're going to send Plato up there. It's going to give us a wider view of possible civilizations. But people keep reporting that aliens are landing in their backyards. We can't disregard those reports.
Yeah. Well, and that does bring up, speaking of the conference, one of our speakers, and maybe this will start off and we can all comment on this, because I know Jason was really excited about this speaker, and I'm not sure, I think you got to interview him, Lee, is Jeffrey Bennett. And he is the senior visiting scientist for NASA. He works with SETI. He wrote a book with Seth Shostak, the lead researcher for SETI. Really interesting guy. He's an author. He told us that he wrote some children's books about science and space, which are really neat, and they were recently sent to the International Space Station, so NASA astronauts are reading those and doing readings for kids, I guess, from the space station of those. So really interesting guy, just heavily, I mean, you know, definitely a mainstream scientist when it comes to the search for extraterrestrial life and possibilities of life out there. Great guy. But one of the speakers or one of the audience asked him during the Q&A, why don't they train like the Hubble or some of these other telescopes on planets to see like Mars when, you know, we see weird stuff? You know, we've all written stories about the weird stuff reportedly seen on Mars. Why don't they train these telescopes on those weird places so they can see what those are? And his answer, I think, is really interesting, and I think a lot of our listeners are probably wondering the same thing. And his answer is, those telescopes are not designed to do that. They're designed for deep, deep space, these things that are emitting, or at least where very little light is getting here from those objects deep, deep in space. So it's calibrated only to be able to capture very, very low amounts of light. So like you said, if we trained one of those on a planet, there's just too much light, and it would just be distorted, and the very sensitive equipment is not calibrated for that sort of thing. So that's why, even with this new Plato guy, you know, you're not going to be able to look at near Earth objects, meaning in our solar system. These are designed for far, far off things.
A telescope or a spacecraft like Kepler, all that it can really do is to even just simply detect that there might be planets around these suns, because it can see how, as a planet is moving across the sun, it causes a dip in the light coming to us from the sun. So we can't possibly do anything else with the telescope or the information on Kepler. It would really require a much more powerful telescope to even start to look at the atmosphere of these planets.
Yeah, and I mean there are plenty of ground-based telescopes and observatories that are capable of looking at the surface of the planets here in our solar system, and they do, as well as the high-rise camera aboard the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. So there are plenty of tools that can and do get closer looks at the planet's surface, but you know, when these weird anomalies come up, I don't really think you have the people in charge of these wonderful tools saying, oh, let me dial that in and I'll take a look.
Right.
It'd
right.
be cool if they did, because, you know, we are all curious and we want to see better images and stuff. But the capability is there. But I love that question, and I love Bennett's response to it, that those tools specifically aren't designed for that purpose. And another thing I love about Bennett in his presentation, you mentioned that he writes children's science books too. But that's a great thing about him. We had so much science at this year's conference. And Bennett is one of those scientists who can take really complicated stuff and put it into terms that mm-hmm. everybody can understand. He doesn't fill his presentation with a bunch of science mumbo jumbo. He takes this incredible information and lays it out in a very understandable way.
Mm-hmm. I think people probably thought, you know, a conventional mainstream scientist, that seems kind of boring, but he's very clever, he's witty. He even admits he's maybe not as jokey as Seth Shostak, who's another great speaker, but he's so entertaining and compelling, and the things he talks about are so interesting, and he's a great speaker that I just love Jeffrey Bennett. I've seen him talk before, and I loved it this time.
The funny thing about his his talking and the thing about the line about Seth having better jokes, that's what Bennett said. The funny thing about that is when I talked to Seth and we were going to get Seth to come to the conference, he said, well, you've already got Jeffrey, so you don't need me, and his jokes are better anyway.
I was going to say that I did a one-on-one interview with Bennett, and knowing that he's mainstream and conservative and that he's worked with SETI, so I kind of know, we all know what the attitude is of SETI about UFOs. So I kind of approached him in my interview. I asked him to go back to his childhood, and basically I said, when you were a youngster, did you believe back then that Earth was being visited by aliens? And he said, well, yeah, actually, I guess I did. I saw all the movies, and I was impressionable. And then I said, okay, so Now let's fast forward to today. You've gone through all kinds of training, professional training. What about now? Do you believe aliens have been and may currently be visiting Earth? And he jumped right into it. He said that, yeah, he thinks he'd like to believe that we're still being visited, but his professional training compels him to need strong evidence, like a piece of a ship or a piece of an alien to actually examine, you know, those kinds of things that aren't readily available. But he definitely wants to believe that we're being visited. And I'm glad that he said that.
Well, that's something that I really appreciate about him as a scientist, because a lot of we hear about a lot of mainstream scientists when talking about the UFO subject or intelligent extraterrestrials. They're very unscientific about it. They will not entertain the possibility because they've been told by others that that's not a possibility. So rather than looking for the evidence, entertaining possibilities, and trying to find the proof for themselves, they just put that as a non-possibility. It's ridiculous, so they won't consider it. Bennett, however, even in his presentation and in his book, talk about his own UFO sightings. And, you know, while he says, as a scientist, you know, I think this is probably what it was, but I can't prove that. So there are other possibilities. And he certainly entertains those other possibilities.
Right. Yeah. So I want to stick with the science end of things, because I know that's something that we're all really, really interested in. And I feel very proud that we were able to integrate without, you know, limiting any, I think, fringe type of topics, but also inject a lot of really great mainstream science. I mean, some big wigs in science. And the next one would be Richard Hoover, who is an astrobiologist. He did, you know, lead the astrobiology group at Marshall Space Center in Alabama. He's won like the NASA Inventors Award of the Year. I mean, yeah. He's got these credentials that go forever and ever. Very interesting character. And you would think, again, that this would be a dry talk. His was definitely much, much, much more technical and detailed. But he, again, is a very interesting guy, a fun guy. He had a few jokes and stuff. People seemed to really like his talk. He stayed at the entire conference, watched all of the lectures, even the most fringe, and he even, you know, came up and asked a couple of questions at times. So he was really interesting. And, you know, I know, Lee, you asked him the same thing in an interview that we posted up on Open Minds, which was, you know, what about UFOs? And he had the same kind of answer, which is similar, you know, that he would like to believe it, but not sure. You know, he wants more evidence and this sort of thing. But he was another great speaker, I felt. That was a hit. That went really well.
Oh, yeah. And you know, his insistence that there's already evidence for the existence of alien life, both in certain types of meteorites that have been found and in this photograph taken 10 years ago by the Mars Opportunity rover, that he says, when he first saw this photograph, he says, it's obviously a fossil of something that was once alive on the Red Planet. And he showed it around to his colleagues. And some people agreed with him. Others told him not to talk about it. And shortly thereafter, he noticed when he went back to the original to newer pictures from Mars, he noticed that someone on Earth had apparently directed the Mars Opportunity rover to use one of its tools to basically an abrasion tool, the rover was told to basically grind it down so it doesn't exist anymore, and yet the original pictures are still available. And I have to say, Jason wrote an amazing piece about it for Open Minds, and I think people should really read this, and not just because I'm part of the piece, but because it's a really important story. Mm-hmm. Hoover has said many times that he'll debate anybody, any other scientist, on the findings from the meteorites and the picture on Mars. He says that there's already evidence that there is free-flowing water on Mars right now, and he will debate anyone, but nobody wants to debate him. It's an amazing story, I think.
I agree.
It really is. And, you know, we knew it was a long shot when I reached out to Hoover to invite him to our conference, and I was just blown away when he was actually interested. When he actually responded, and then number two, he was actually willing to come and speak. And like you said, this is a guy who the career with NASA, more than 46 years,
right?
Really accomplished scientist, such a smart guy. And number one, I was super excited to see that he actually enjoyed himself at the event. And number two, it was just a thrill to talk with him about science, about extraterrestrial life, and to hear, you know, I guess be able to vent with him a little bit. We both vented together about the frustration with some mainstream scientists and their, for whatever reason, their unwillingness to be scientific. And so that frustrates him to no end. He doesn't understand why some scientists are just so opposed to science. And, man, you just listen to this guy talk. He knows his stuff, and he gets really jazzed about it and really exciting things to say. Lee, I think your interview with him was incredible. That's such a really amazing interview, and I think people should really watch that. This is a guy who really has done some amazing work, and I hope people will debate him because he can talk about it very intelligently. And there's a lot to be said about a mainstream scientist who will come to a UFO conference, deal with UFO people, the typical UFO crowd, as well as get involved. And like you said, Alejandro, come up and ask questions during Q&A. And, you know, as he's kind of getting familiar with the ins and outs of the UFO field too. He was exposed to it for the first time, and he had a good time. And surprisingly, you know, we were certainly not sure how the audience would respond to a NASA person, because of course NASA's the bad guy and they hide everything from us. But we never know how mainstream scientists are going to be received at the conference. He was received really well, as were all the scientists. So excited to have Richard Hoover, so excited to meet him, and more than that, so excited that the outcome of all of this was so positive.
I think that he also represented it, and this is what people appreciated, was this view that, you know, scientists have such strong worldviews that sometimes things that challenge those, they just kind of ignore. And so his whole experience of getting stonewalled is similar to those in this field who have done research and are asking for NASA or others to respond to it in a professional manner, you know, to analyze what they've got. So, and that he, you know, such a mainstream person and such an accomplished scientist is running against the same problems that I think it's really eye-opening for people, confirming, and I think they appreciate him coming forward and saying that. And I hope, because, you know, often your stories, Lee, go viral and get picked up by mainstream media. I hope this one does as well. So I hope some scientists are feel compelled, or at least NASA feels compelled to come and address this, and hopefully have people give him some sort of forum where he could debate or at least discuss this and, you know, bring this topic and his evidence front and center, because it seems deserving.
Well, yes, it does. And I was really happy that when I asked him point blank, I said, Professor, tell me what your personal opinion is about UFOs. And he was very honest. He said, well, I really don't know. I don't have an answer about that. All that I know for sure is that there has been evidence of life that's not restricted to Earth. And here's the evidence, you know, meteorite fossils, picture on Mars, water on Mars. So even though he didn't talk much about UFOs, his information, his background, and what he says is clear evidence of extraterrestrial life is just as compelling, if not more, than the fact that he didn't talk about UFOs. And that's what I liked about him.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So moving on, the next, just kind of to get to the full panel that we did on science, the next person was Professor Ted Peters. He's a professor of theology. He also writes for a journal called Theology and Science. He's actually co-editor of this, so he's used to writing about science. He's used to dealing with SETI and speaking with SETI and sometimes debating different ideas about theology. He's much more philosophical. He also kind of addresses the sociological end of things. He's been at UFO conferences before, but I love this guy. I love the way his mind works and the way he thinks. He's not like someone who's always pushing his worldview or that people, you know, see things biblically or anything. He's, I think, taking a wider view of things, which is appreciative, but, you know, keeping in mind the theological side of things, because, of course, many people are religious, but he also doesn't ignore the atheistic point of view, which he incorporates also and kind of contrasts that. So I think he was really interesting.
Well, I agree. I like Ted Peters a lot. One of the things about him that's very interesting is that he likes to say that many religious leaders and believers are totally willing right now to go into a church and share a pew with extraterrestrials. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. What about you, Jason?
I love Ted, and I think he's was a great addition to that science panel and to the conference in general. I mean, mm-hmm. the religious aspect to the whole extraterrestrial issue is a very popular one, and nobody tells it like Ted. I mean, he's such an easygoing guy, but so well-spoken and really well-versed on, a variety of topics. But, you know, he knows his religion, and like you said, he's very good about also approaching the atheistic point of view as well. It was an interesting addition to have him on the science panel, but it worked really well.
Yeah, I think for him being on the science panel, it was perfect because we had Jeffrey Bennett, who is more of a mainstream SETI representative, also very articulate and is able to, like you say, translate difficult to understand scientific concepts for the layman. You also then had Richard Hoover, who's very focused on his aspect. He's very focused on his search for extraterrestrial life at the microbial level, micro level or in that, or maybe even fossils and that sort of thing. So he was focused on that. And then you had Ted Peters, who kind of, I think, was able to fill in the gaps and bring the philosophical aspect into this, which was really helpful and made that panel well-rounded. And I think what people might not have realized is that was a debate. They all had different points of view. They were all bringing up different points as far as evidence for extraterrestrial life. And it was so civil, and it was so well done, you know, and everybody was just so respectful of one another that it didn't feel like a debate, but really it was.
Alejandro, I have a question for you. Being up there on the stage with those three formidable individuals, how did that feel to you?
Oh, to me, it felt amazing. I mean, that was probably for me. There are other great speakers, other great moments that were a lot of fun. And I don't know if everybody would agree with this, but for me, that was the highlight of the conference, I think. You know, I think it was new and original and groundbreaking. It was like walking on untouched snow in that we were, I think, going in directions not just for the conference and for this field, but also for science in general in new and different and interesting directions. Because I think some of these ideas around like panspermia, they're going to come to the forefront when we do find life, which, you know, many scientists feel is right around the corner, even if it is, you know, just a bacteria or fossil of a bacteria or something, that it's going to bring this question. And there was an astrophysicist who I had on the show who really drove home the point, and I think he is I think he's on the money in that we can't forget. And it was a point that I wanted to make sure everybody agreed on to confirm that they agreed on it. But we don't know where the genesis of life happened. We don't know what it was that created life on this, created the life that is on this planet, let alone where that happened. It hasn't happened here since life has come here. So we don't know, as Bennett put it, if it's easy or it's hard. So I think that's a really interesting point. And with Ted Peters filling in the philosophical aspects, you know, if I was going to tell people a DVD that you have to get from the conference, it's going to be the science panel. I was like in heaven. I was loving that panel.
I think that having them there as individual speakers and then having them there as the panel – that alone sets the bar pretty high for future conferences. These are the kind of people you want at these conferences.
Yeah, well, that's what we do at the UFO Congress. We set the bar every year. Yeah. So next, I want to bring up Robert Schroeder, just because he was science. But this was another gamble. This was another roll of the dice. This is a guy who has some very technical information to put across. And I'll share some of the, I don't think he'll mind, you know, some of what was making us nervous when we brought him on. I did an interview with him, and I thought what he had to say was fascinating. It was, you know, steeped with science. It was, you know, mainstream science. But some things he was pulling out that may be things we can look at in the UFO field to find out what UFOs are doing. He was using UFO cases to demonstrate that this might be the propulsion that some of these objects use. And so I thought he was really interesting. He's got a book called UFO Enigma about UFO propulsion. But it was a gamble because his information is a little dry. And then he comes, and Jason maybe could tell us more about it. He tells Jason that he's nervous and he's not a very good public speaker, which made us really nervous. And we're like, uh-oh, what's going to happen here? But it was so incredible to see him get up on the stage, and he's such a personable and patient and nice person. And he also, I think, is good at translating complicated concepts to the layman, that people loved him. They loved his talk. They were laughing. They stayed engaged. We had big crowds the entire conference. So we had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people at every lecture. And afterwards, he was swamped. He sold all of his books in a heartbeat. And people just loved him. And I love that because he's a great guy. He's a nice guy. And I think that helped. But I think people also loved his information. So I was really happy that he was a hit.
Yeah, me too. And like I said, he's such a nice guy, super knowledgeable, great presentation. And yeah, he had a little bit of stage fright, but I'm glad he overcame that. He wasn't sure how he'd be received, but he was received very well, and I think that helped him get over the stage fright and give a really good presentation.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. He's the kind of guy where you don't often hear about UFO conferences that will feature a scientist who likes to talk about other dimensional realities that physicists are like closing in on. As a possibility of where some UFOs might come from and where they go to. He really likes also to point out that there is still that 5% of UFO reports that do come from really credible witnesses, and there's something there that science really needs to consider. That there is hard data. People say, well, there's no hard data. Even Jeffrey Bennett said, well, I'd like to examine hard data. Well, there is data, whether it's radar tapes or gun camera film shot by jet pilots. There is stuff there. Just because it hasn't been shown publicly doesn't mean it's not there, and someone should be out there trying to get all that stuff out, but it's almost like an impossible dream to do that.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about, but I want to move on to some of the other places where we rolled dice. And it seems like really every place where we took a big risk paid off for us. But one of the other ones, because he's a newcomer to the field too, and, you know, that's what we always try to do is feature new and different people who aren't, you know, regulars on the circuit. But that's David Marler speaking about triangular UFO craft. Luckily, it was unfortunate that he was, like, the last speaker, and that's because he wasn't sure if he was going to be able to come. He thought he might have to work, so we had to slate him there. Luckily, he could come to the entire conference, and he sold all of his books, which is great because that's kind of hard when you're usually your book sales happen after you talk. But he's really interesting. He was another guy that turned out to be an incredible speaker. He had a great PowerPoint with some just terribly interesting research and cases about triangular UFOs. He even said, you know, when he looked at that, when he decided to write a book, he looked the field over. He's been in it for a while. He actually received a great big UFO collection, Lou Farish's collection, when he passed away. And so he looked at all the data and said, you know what, no one's really written a book on triangular UFOs, so that's what I'm going to do. He did years of research. Richard Dolan then published his book, which I think is great. And he did a great job. He was a great guy to meet. People loved talking to him. So even before his talk, he was kind of a hit of the conference, and I'm glad that came across really good.
Yeah, I like David. I met him recently, and I was in my interview with him. I hadn't realized until he and I spoke that, you know, he had included in his book the triangular UFO encounter that I was involved with.
That's
in,
right.
In 1975. And David told me that investigation that I did, and I was asked to do the investigation by the late Dr. J. Allen Hynek, David said that the Lumberton, North Carolina UFO case was the first credible multiple witness one in this country, and I hadn't known that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was really cool that he said he was going to talk about your sighting Lee on stage, and he did, and I'm glad. I thought he was going to forget that, but I remember I was out in the hall and I was talking to you. I think it was right after he had just mentioned you on stage. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, and he and I have talked since the Congress, and and he wants to pick my brain a little bit more because he and I hadn't talked before he wrote his book. So there were some gaps in his story that he wanted me to fill in because I was there. I was under the UFO when it shot a beam of light down on me and a lot of law enforcement officers. And so I'm happy that he's put the book out. And I loved his little triangular UFO model that he had in the vendor's room with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so really interesting guy. I've interviewed him for the radio show, and I've interviewed you about your sighting that you're talking about. But that was fun because that was what year was that?
1975.
Right, where Alan J. Hynek sent you out to where these sightings were happening, and then you saw it yourself. So people can read the book, get his book to read more.
That's right.
All right. So the next roll of the dice, moving towards kind of more of the fringe and. This turned out to be one of the most popular talks, and I was really nervous about this one.
Let me guess.
Uh huh.
Because you and I, you know, we've been like on the same page here with all the people you brought up. Let me just guess to see who this might be, because there was someone there who I wasn't sure I was going to want to interview, but after I saw her presentation.
I already know you're wrong, but go ahead.
Oh, well, okay. Good night. Take care.
Wrong gender, but go ahead, yes.
Well, then I'll tell you what. Finish your thought, and then maybe we'll
no,
talk
No, I want to hear your guess.
Patty Greer's crop circle stuff.
No, that wasn't it, because, you know, she's been around before. She's been at the conference every year, and she usually has a documentary that she shows every year, and sometimes she does a talk. So her information wasn't as new to everyone as, you know, she had never been given the stage to do a full-on lecture. So it wasn't as much of a roll of the dice with her. We knew that people would probably like it. It's crop circles. They like her movies. She was won several EBE awards.
Right.
And she just missed winning one with at this conference at the film festival. But you're right. Her talk, as we thought, we were fairly certain, did very well. People really liked her.
Well, I just thought that her photos, her aerial photos that she took from an ultralight,
mm-hmm.
were absolutely amazing, including crop circles that have a 3D effect. I was knocked out by those.
Yeah.
Well, I thought with Lee's specific interests, he might get this one, but
yeah, Jason knows. I thought he was going to guess, but I should tell people, go check out Patty Greer. You can Google her, Patty Greer, and really interesting stuff like Lee talked about. One of the great things I love about her is we've used her pictures in the magazine before, and crop circle pictures, as Lee probably knows, are very hard to come by because there are a lot of people who make a living off of going out there, or especially in England, taking pictures of them and then selling them. So it often becomes difficult for us because we don't have the biggest budget when we're putting together the magazine. But she's always forthcoming and willing to share her pictures. She said she sent you something like 100 pictures, Lee, or 40 pictures, I think.
Yeah, she basically, we sat down together in Arizona, and she took her PowerPoint presentation and just about transferred it to a flash drive. And by the way, Alejandro, I'll say this publicly, I stole something from you, but I'll get it back to you. The flash drive you lent to me.
Oh, okay, no problem. Luckily, I have plenty of them.
But not only her crop circles, but she has pictures of these balls of light that would come over the area where crop circles were formed, perfectly circular, orange-brownish-colored balls that would hover over trees. And as she took sequenced pictures of them, suddenly there'd be like slices would be taken out of these, as if you had a circular cake and you took a slice out of the cake. Well, that's what these balls of light were doing, as if they were opening little doorways into them. And I've never seen anything like that. And I don't think she was playing any kind of a hoax. I think she actually captured a totally unusual aspect of this whole UFO balls of light crop circle thing that has never been photographed before. And I was very impressed.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought her up, because I did want to mention her, and she was someone who hasn't done a lot of talks, so she was one of the new people that we highlighted, and you know, just like these last few people that I've mentioned, you know, we try to bring some people that, you know, aren't on the circuit, but hopefully do become hot shots, and by us highlighting their work or letting them speak, that other people see, wow, these guys are awesome, I want them to come to our local MUFON, or I want them to come to our conference, so...
Yeah.
I have a feeling a lot of these people are going to be doing a lot more lectures. But the biggest hit, surprisingly, and kind of one of our biggest gambles, and I am really happy about it, because this guy I've known for many years, and he's the nicest guy. But Jason, I think you know who I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm not going to announce it. You
come
announce
on,
it.
You do it.
It's Mr. Bigfoot, Kiwani.
That's right. Bigfoot stole the show. So, yeah, I mean, he has a lot of stories, and they are pretty out there. They're not the type of things that, you know, we're used to seeing, hearing, well, related to Bigfoot in the UFO field. Although, interesting enough, it seems like UFO researchers are more willing to incorporate Bigfoot than Bigfoot researchers are to incorporate UFOs. But I remember, you know, starting off with MUFON, even John Schuchler, who was the director at the time, was talking about how there are a lot of Bigfoot sightings where there are UFO sightings, and he had a big interest in that. But that was kind of the gist of his talk, is that there are people who see UFOs and then see Bigfoot around the same time, and then they feel like they communicate. You know, they report communicating with Bigfoot, and they report communicating with extraterrestrials and lots of other types of entities, and that these things can go in and out of portals, which we've heard when it comes to the Skinwalker Ranch. In fact, I think Kiwani was the first one ever to talk about Bigfoot's being reported walking through portals and things. But yeah, it was a very interesting talk. It was one of those where, you know, you got to go, wow, really? Because it's like just some really kind of out there kind of stories. But he's just such a great guy, too. And, you know, he also talked about the message being taking care of the planet, and this kind of link with the Native Americans and their philosophies. And so it was an interesting talk. He's a great speaker, and he's another one, even though he spoke early on, he sold all of his books before he even got on stage, that people were really interested in it. So and he brought quite a few. Almost everybody was like that. Everybody sold all their books before Timothy Good, the same thing, before they even got on stage, and everybody was telling me, man, I wish I would have brought more books. Yeah, that was an interesting one. I know, Lee, you write about Bigfoot all the time.
I do, and in fact, I was writing about it while I was there at the conference, because just by sheer coincidence, as you guys know, Bigfoot, another Bigfoot, was trying to steal the show a few miles away from the conference.
Right.
You know, there was supposed to be the kickoff of a national tour of a supposedly, allegedly dead Bigfoot that was supposedly kick off in Phoenix. It turned out it was a no-show. Bigfoot never showed in Phoenix and went to Texas instead. But that's another story. That's another show.
Yeah. So I think those were all of our biggest gambles. What do you think, Jason? Is there another big gamble you can think of?
Big gambles? You know, it... No, I don't think so. And
yeah,
the reason why is... Well, and this is something that, you know, it's a bone I have to pick with some of the people who come to UFO conferences, and that is the inability or the dislike for a variety of opinions. And one really big, not really big, but, you know, some vocal people were very upset about Dr. John Alexander.
Right, you know, and... I mean, this is a guy who certainly deserves a platform in a conference like this. One of the things is, like you mentioned, we try to be very diverse. And I think this conference was as diverse as you can get when you've got mainstream SETI scientists on one end, and then you've got Bigfoot UFO guy at the other end, you know, which I think is a great thing. But, yeah, people don't like it when people don't talk about their worldview. And what's interesting, what others might not realize, is sometimes people, like we had an abduction person who said, you know, I think it should be all about abductions. That's it. And So a lot of people would rather see everything that points to their worldview, but what's hard, especially when you're the biggest conference, you know, you have to try to please everybody.
It's one of
those things, hey, where you can never please everyone type of thing.
You're not going to, and as we said before, I don't think you should. I really don't think a conference that's trying to appeal to the general public as well as big researchers and just trying to give an overall view of this complex field, you shouldn't just cater to one specific crowd or one specific set of beliefs. Our goal is to, you know, highlight certain research, but also, you know, give lots of people a platform, kind of open it up and present the viewpoints that are out there. If we were just to present one viewpoint, one set of beliefs, then, you know, and I can't think of a better way to phrase this than what I mentioned to some people. If you want to go to a place where everybody believes exactly the way you believe and won't entertain any other ideas, then go to church. This isn't church. This is the conference looking for answers, and we all have different beliefs and different things we ascribe to. You know, I know I don't see eye to eye with both of you on absolutely everything. You know,
what?
We agree on a lot of things, but we are individuals. We have our own set of beliefs and the things that we gravitate towards more than others. We're not going to have the same interests on every single topic. So I think that's important for people to keep in mind. We are humans. We are all different. And we're not trying to just lock it down to this exclusive club of people who only see our way of thinking. That's a dangerous road to go down, and that's a big, big problem with some people in the field of UFO research, that they're only willing to ascribe to one set of beliefs. They don't want to hear anything that's contrary to that. And it's the same argument that those same people have about government officials or scientists. You know, I mean, you can't have it both ways. People need to understand there are different views, different viewpoints are good, and we need to be able to talk about our differences in a sophisticated way, come together with our common interests, and understand that we have different viewpoints.
Amen.
That's my soapbox. Thank you.
Yep. Amen, brother. I'll testify. That was great.
Yeah, but people did complain about John Alexander. They'll never have him here again. You know, and I think people like John Alexander, you know, whether or not you agree with what he says or not, you know, that's a great example of someone that I think should be there, and we should have, and people disagree with us on this too. You should have skeptics. I mean, if you are really just pro-UFO, yay, UFO, aliens are here, then, you know, when outsiders are looking in, when the mainstream public's looking in, when mainstream science is looking in, you're not really taken seriously. You're not looking at things objectively. And that's why we do what we do with the magazine, our website, and really everything we try to do with this field is be objective. Put out the information that's out there on both sides of the table. Well, there are many sides to this table. It's a very many-sided table. But, you know, present all of those views, the details that we have, and let people make up their own minds.
Right.
I agree. And I just want to say that I first met John Alexander a few years ago at a MUFON symposium in California. And back then, he was coming under a lot of heat from the general UFO community for the things that he was saying about UFOs. And over the last two or three years, I've actually become very good friends with John. And I've really looked into his past, he's done some things that people don't know about. And he has actually helped to change my opinion on a lot of what's been going on with UFOs and the reality of UFOs. And he's always saying the same thing, that people aren't asking the right questions about UFOs, and that's what gets everybody tripped up. And
right.
I believe him. And if anybody ever has a chance to just sit down with a guy for an hour or two and listen to what he actually has to say one-on-one, he'll change your whole mind about a variety of things. He has seen and done more things than I would ever hope to accomplish in my life. And he's really got a good handle on UFOs. He was a very, important, instrumental part of the whole Skinwalker Ranch beginnings years ago. He actually put together the original scientific team called NIDS that spent years at the Skinwalker Ranch in Utah investigating paranormal phenomena that was going on there. When the Skinwalker Ranch was first bought by Robert Bigelow, who spent the first night there alone to try and see things? It was John Alexander.
Yeah, and we've got a great interview on the website where we did on Skinwalker where he talked about that. But
yeah.
I know we've gone over on time, but I just want to talk about, you know, the last kind of thing that we should hit on, which I think was a big deal and a lot of fun, which was the government panel and what the government really knows. And without John Alexander, that panel wouldn't have been half as interesting. And it was really interesting, I thought. I think it was one of the best debates on this from a bunch of UFO believers, which he is a believer, and he studies a lot of paranormal phenomena that he feels he's experienced, let alone believe. So, that panel was really interesting. We had some great people. We had Tim Good, who's been in this for decades, has broken some of the biggest stories in this field. We had Robert Powell, who's a director of research for MUFON, who I think is an incredible mind in this field. But it did become kind of a Stephen Bassett versus John Alexander battle, which was fun, and it was interesting. And, you know, Stephen Bassett is a crowd pleaser. He's a great speaker. He's really witty. So I think the crowd was definitely mostly with him. But, you know, and there are a lot of Alexander fans. So when he came out and talked, people were clapping before he even said the first word. They were really happy to see him. So he's got a lot of fans, too. So that panel was a lot of fun. And I think it was because of that kind of heated debate that came on. And what's really fun is right after that panel, Stephen Bassett and John Alexander go have dinner together.
With Lee Spiegel.
With Lee Spiegel,
with Lee
that's
Spiegel.
Right.
That's funny.
With Lee Spiegel and Rob Simone, the four of us went to have dinner together, and it couldn't have been a more pleasant dinner between all of us, I just want to say.
Yeah, which is good, because I think, you know, some people want everybody who have different views to hate each other, and this is great because these are the two champions of these two different views, and they're friends, and that's the way it should be. I mean, we should be able to civilly debate things and continue to have relationships, because we're all looking for the same thing. We're all looking for the truth. And certainly, I mean, as I think we'd all attest, because we're all John Alexander fans to some degree, and that John Alexander is not a disinformationist. He's just like everyone looking for the truth.
That's right.
Regardless of if he has different views than many others.
And you know, as much as I completely, totally disagree with both of you guys, I still love you a lot.
Yeah, exactly. We feel that you're completely full of it as well.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I'll just mention one more thing about John Alexander. I'm not, you know, saying I'm a John Alexander lover or anything, not to give that opinion but or impression. But, you know, he, because the room was so pro-Stephen Bassett during that panel, you know, Alexander got a lot of heat, and a lot of people were teaming up against him. It was like almost a lynch mob if, you know, you didn't agree with Stephen Bassett in that room. And after that panel, I was in the vendor room, and I was talking to John, and four or five people came up while I was talking to him to say, great job in there. You said some really good things that got me thinking. I really appreciate your views on that, and I would have applauded or said something, but I was afraid to because of how people in that room were very anti you. So there were a lot of people who agreed with him, but were afraid to voice or show signs that they agreed with him because they were afraid they would be attacked for their beliefs. And that's terrible. You know, an event like this should be all about being able to express your opinion without fear of being attacked. I mean, that's what a lot of people dealing in voicing their opinions about this topic deal with in the rest of the world. When you come to an event like the International UFO Congress, it should be a place where ideas are welcome and you're allowed to talk about this stuff without feeling like you're going to be attacked.
Right. And I think that we can be proud to say that along with all of the conferences that we've put together, there have been no physical attacks. I think that's a good statistic.
There have been at some after parties, but yes, not at the main event.
Well, not a total physical. There have been, heated disagreements. I wouldn't say a total on physical attack, at least not for ours.
There have been physical attacks, but they've been love-related, not UFO-related.
Yeah, true. Good point.
Lover quarrels. Those have happened at UFO conferences.
Or amorous attacks, because, you know, not to brag, but Jason and I did have some women kind of attack us and trying to get a little close.
I'm sorry. Why am I only hearing about this now?
Yeah, I guess we haven't shared this with you yet, Lee, but
we'll
talk later.
Don't tell certain
things to reporters. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
We don't know what you're going to report. All right, well, then, I think we've gone over, but it's been really interesting. We've talked about a lot. I would love to talk about every speaker because I thought they were all great. But I'll give you both a chance if you want to mention someone else that we didn't mention before we head out.
Well, yeah, Patty Greer was the one that I was going to point out, but I already have. I was just totally taken by visuals. You know, we've all seen crop circles. Everybody's seen them. Everybody has an opinion about them. But I just loved the fact that she showed me something new that really intrigued me and kind of opened up that whole field just a little bit more for me, and I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the one I'll point out quickly is our good friend Aaron Sagers. And the reason I'm highlighting him is because he's something different to UFO conferences. And in our goal to make the UFO topic more palatable to the mainstream public, his presentation on celebrity UFO encounters is really something that just the general public coming in, the locals coming in, could understand, they could soak in, they could say, and we've talked about it many times on this show about celebrities and why we talk about celebrities and UFOs, and that's because celebrities are popular. Mainstream public listens to what celebrities say. They follow what celebrities do. So when celebrities talk about UFOs in an open way and voice their beliefs, that makes it more easier for people to say, wow, maybe I should look into UFOs. There could be something to this. Maybe I believe in UFOs. So Aaron's presentation about celebrity UFO encounters was entertaining. It was lighthearted, but it still got information out there that I think was really good for the general public. And he's such a great presenter. I mean, this is what he does for a living. He goes around to these big-time, hugely popular events like Comic-Con and things and moderates panels. And so he's a great, great public speaker, and he's a good friend as well. So Aaron Sagers was great to see at the International UFO Congress.
Right. Yeah, I agree. So, and we couldn't get to some other stuff, but the abduction panel was really interesting. People loved that. That was the last thing we had at the end, and that was moderated by Yvonne Smith, who did a talk. Actually, she replaced Dr. Artie Sixkiller, who couldn't make it. She got sick. But the abduction panel also had Kim Carlsberg, Mike Cleland, and Kawani Lapsaritis, and they were talking about, abduction experiences, a communication with extraterrestrials. And what I think is really interesting about that is the messages, the philosophies are just so advanced, I think, you know, that regardless of whether you believe these people have these experiences or making these communications, what they have to say and what they feel that they're receiving is some incredible heartwarming stuff about, you know, taking care of each other and the planet and things like this. So that was a really amazing. I love Sagers too. We had Don Schmidt talking about his latest research. Then we also had the Adamski Foundation, Rob Simone, Jaime Musan, as usual, who had a full room, standing ovation. People really love him all the time. Timothy Good, who we talked about a little bit, decades of research. And then George Norrie. George Norrie came. Yeah,
yeah,
which that was a lot of fun because he's hilarious. I didn't know he was so funny. He comes and he does a comedy act, really.
He's a joker.
His Q&A.
Well, and the thing with George Norrie is he didn't actually do a presentation, but the fact that he came on stage to just talk to the audience, and it was a packed audience.
And some tough questions.
Yeah, and people lined up to talk to him, and he handled everything just the way he does on the radio. But I noticed one thing about George. He seems to be a lot looser and more fun on stage live than he is on his show.
I agree. He's real straightforward on the show, real serious, but he was just fun and silly on stage.
Yep.
A lot of fun. I think people love that. He was fun and silly when he was answering the questions from the audience. So I think people, had a lot of fun with that. They kind of stressed this because they wanted to do these different things to present him, but it really created this incredible energy in the room, so it was well worth it, and we're so happy that he could participate. That was really cool.
Something else that was really cool was the Science Channel's participation in the Congress,
oh,
too,
yeah.
Partnering with us and showing some exclusive screenings of their upcoming alien programming for their Are We Alone month. And we also announced at the conference that our colleague Maureen's show is going to be part of Are We Alone month, that is Uncovering Aliens. So that will be there. And we also announced the show that I'm going to be on called Hangar One, the UFO Files, that is premiering on H2, History 2, this Friday. And check your listings. It's 10 Eastern and then work backwards for your specific time zone. But it's an hour-long program, I believe. It will premiere on Friday and then air at the same time every week after that. There are 8 episodes, so I think they're going to air all 8 of them in a row.
You know, everything that we've talked about here, the three of us, now that I think about it, it really did all come together as an amazing conference. It had so many interesting people. I was just happy to be there. And I have to say, if there are going to be future UFO Congress events, which I hope there will be, I think you guys are going to need a larger venue to accommodate the larger audiences.
I think you're right.
Your words are so kind, Lee. Thank you for that
sure.
High praise.
Yep. Man, you deserve a couple more hugs.
Well, if you're talking to me, I'll take all the hugs I can get.
All right.
Well, I'll point those young women your way, the ones who are calling you a UFO hottie.
Yeah.
You're going to give the wrong impression about me to your vast audience out there.
You're not a UFO hottie?
Well, maybe you're going to give the right impression of me, actually.
Maybe.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Well,
always fun,
too.
Guys.
Yeah, so I'll just close up the show real quick here. Thank you all so much for listening once again. Of course, watch the Huffington Post for Lee's stories. He's got some new stories he's working on, some of which we've just talked about.
Right.
Some other really cool stuff, too, that came as a result of the conference, and new stuff that is separate from the conference. So Lee's always got some cool new stuff coming out. Also, of course, be sure to watch Open Minds, where you can go to openminds.tv, where you can read the news stories. You can also go to our store and buy the DVDs of these talks. They were great, so you're definitely going to want to get a few of those. You can buy them all, too, in one big package at a discount as well. Or you could go to UFO Congress, but keep an eye out for next year's conference, because I'm telling you, and I tell you guys all the time, and I think a lot of you are learning, once we announce the dates and the times and stuff, you got to get out there and reserve your room. Did you hear this, Lee?
Yes, I did, dear.
Immediately, because that way you have one locked in, because the rooms sell out really quick. We sold out all the hotels in the entire Fountain Hills town out there. Luckily, there's lots of hotels within 15 minutes, but if you want to be right there close to the conference, you got to get a room quick. So be sure to do that. Also, watch our YouTube channel, where we have this great interview with Lee and Richard Hoover. We also have Stephen Bassett receiving or getting the award for Researcher of the Year, and also Bruce McAbee receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award. And we'll have up soon the UFO Film Festival Awards as well. And we're going to have more interviews that Lee did and that we got at the conference. So keep an eye on our YouTube. And, of course, always we've got Jason and Maureen coming out every other week and doing all of the UFO news on Spacing Out. So keep an eye out for that as well. And anything I'm forgetting, guys?
No.
You've done nicely.
Yeah, you've done really well. For those who couldn't make it to the conference, definitely plan on it for next year.
For sure. And finally, I want to, as usual, thank the guys who created the music, Caleb Hanks for the opening music, and also Two Earth Minutes for the close. You guys got to go check out Caleb Hanks, too. He has this new EP that he put out that is really cool. So you've got to just go look, Google Caleb Hanks, and you'll be able to find that. It's really cool, and I'll ask him if we can play some of it on the show. Maybe I'll play the end music, change it up for the next few weeks and play some of his great music. but it's really cool stuff. And finally, again, thank you to all of you for listening. Talk to you next week. Adios, muchachos.